Hello, and welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab, and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started.
I just am so glad you're here talking to me. I'm so glad you're here, Andrea, talking about self-compassion today.
Yeah, and self-awareness and self-compassion, right?
I feel like that is probably the most important thing when we're dealing with our mental health, dealing with raising kids, running a business, knowing ourselves, having awareness as to how we're feeling, where we're at, what we need. I think it's really hard sometimes to just speak and say what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most important thing when you're communicating with other people or a team or leading, is to actually be aware of what you need and what you want and who you are. But I want to hear from you. I want to know your thoughts, Andrea. I want you to share a little bit about yourself so people get a bit of an awareness of who you are, and as short or as long as you want, and then we'll get into the conversation.
Yeah, so I'm Andrea Tyniec. I'm part of the Well right now, and I'm in Toronto. I've been a classical contemporary music violinist since I'm 6 years old, and there was a big part of my identity. And I've been shifting my whole professional life outside of that identity into just creating content and creating art that is not just musical, but that makes a different kind of impact relating to what I've learned about self-awareness and the impact that has on our work and how it ripples around us, actually. So it's really nice to have the opportunity to have this conversation with you about self-awareness, you know, within a professional context as well, but like family context and different contexts in our life. You know, self-awareness, like I was reflecting on how to define it for myself. And I think everybody has their own relationship to that kind of state. It's a kind of expandable kind of state, I think. When I look at my 12-year-old stepdaughter, she has a different kind of capacity for it. It's growing, right? And it keeps growing. We keep getting to know who we are. Mm. And so self-awareness for me, it's really this kind of state of being where we're having this experience, this kind of whole experience of who we are, like our bodily sensations and our emotions and our thought patterns and also the certain aspects of ourselves that are part of who we are, and having the experience of that, and also being a little outside of that as well, and having a relationship with those things, and have a relationship with our thoughts and a relationship with our aspects of ourselves. And so that we can develop this kind of knowledge, this self-knowledge, and also move who we are and evolve who we are and kind of exert this like self-leadership. Self-awareness is that it always grows. And so for me, it's still obviously in development, and getting to know myself is in development.
Isn't it one of the most enjoyable parts of life is this self-awareness?
Yeah. And it's enjoyable when you're gaining mastery and you're able to, you have this sense that you're making actual choices in your life. It's also confronting, because when you start really looking more deeply within yourself, you find aspects of yourself that you need to integrate, and that without bringing them in, you can easily judge.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's also like growing in this self-awareness and self-knowledge has moments of being confronted with your own self and things that you've done or mistakes that you've made and all of that. So I think it's a very rich kind of territory. It's very active. I'm curious to hear if that's your experience too.
Yeah, I think it, when I hear you share about it, I think of wholeness. And how being self-aware allows me to be more fully myself, more whole. And it does, you're right, like enjoyable almost in the sense of painful and humbling, and that self-discovery, the struggle with it. And I think struggle is where we find joy, is after the struggle, or when we overcome a part of it, or when we have a discovery about ourselves, or when we accept a piece of ourselves that we were finding really hard to accept. And then we can also accept those things about other people. And I think that self-awareness allows us to greater love and like and enjoy ourselves, but also that translates into how we feel about other people around us and being more accepting of their shortcomings and more celebratory of their success. I feel like I wasn't very self-aware, even 5, 6 years ago. I think I've stepped a lot more into that recently, and it does allow me to have a greater appreciation for my family and my kids and my colleagues and the whole well community of women. And I think that's what it is. Like, I've become more self-aware through community because I've seen things reflected, and I've been like, oh, it's okay that I'm that way, or oh yeah, I do that too. I think that's a part of, and they're okay with it, and then I become okay with it. So I think there's so many different ways we can find awareness of ourselves through therapy and through inner work, alone time, and then also through the community. So
I
I
so
find
agree
it,
with that. Yeah, I so agree with that. It was everything you said. And it's interesting because it's a relation, it's like a practice. So the method is not as important as the engagement itself. Like at times I remember I had so many different practices to grow my self-awareness. And there's like the artist's way, which is sort of like a process that you go through with a lot of journaling and free writing. If people know Julia Cameron, that's just an example, but there was always something, right? There was also always some kind of practice and process that helps to focus the presence, but to grow self-awareness. And community or just family or friendships or relationships in general are always mirroring what's occurring, and they're always this opportunity to enter the experience with the intention of growing your self-awareness and at least taking responsibility for that part of the equation always. And that will always, and the joy is that integrating more and more of yourself and becoming the process of becoming more whole, which I think self-awareness is really inviting and producing. It always produces more joy. There's less fragmentation, and there's just this there's less confrontation, there's less judgment towards others. But I think when it comes to how you feel about others and that acceptance, that is more so happening through self-compassion, which is a little bit of a different kind of it's more specific than just generally self-awareness. But self-compassion is just this very focused type of relationship with yourself, and we can go into that. But like, yes, it definitely is invited by practicing that self-awareness. But I love what you said about community, because that can really accelerate how you get to know yourself is in the context of belonging.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a few words I love that came up there. Becoming, because the truth is, self-awareness allows you to become more of yourself. But the funny part about that is you already were yourself, and you've actually created a lot of barriers to being yourself from trauma and from different instances and situations, environments, culture, different things in your life. And then it's actually like you're getting back to yourself. And now I hear people starting to use the term unbecoming, because I think sometimes we become something we're not, and then we're like, wait a second, this isn't aligning. So I'm finding myself through self-awareness practices, but actually I'm just getting back to who I always was, but for some reason shamed myself maybe out of, or who knows why you've changed or created walls. And I think that's why it's so hard sometimes in community and in relationships to become self-aware, because we automatically turn to defensiveness if we're not sort of comfortable with Because it's uncomfortable sometimes to have to discover something about yourself with, and if you don't feel safe in the relationship, it can be really scary to go through that.
Yeah, it can be for sure. And it's like I think growing up, there's a few things you said there that are really very interesting to kind of slow down on is that this the word unbecoming, I say more like unlearning, because you can't really unbecome yourself, but you can certainly unlearn, things that you've taken on from your conditioning or for survival or just because that's what was accepted in your environment. So, when I look at our children or children, it is necessary for them to build up their self, their ego in the world and to learn and to get that conditioning so that that's, kind of constructed. And then unavoidably, they're to grow up, there are things where they're going to have to choose to unlearn things that we gave them as well. Right. And it's sort of part of evolving and growing and not really something to bypass. That's hard. That's part of life to decide what you leave behind. That might have been given to you with a lot of love and for protection and all of these beautiful things, but you don't want it anymore. It's heavy. It's you're choosing to like leave it behind. So the unbecoming or unlearning is, I think, not something we avoid. We get to avoid. It's something that we get to choose. And I think also in this kind of evolving and growing nature of our lives and ourselves, we get to choose the degree to which we're going to act in a kind of self-responsible way to take really responsibility for ourselves. And that's where self-awareness plays a big part. It plays a big part. You can't be like really in self-responsibility without putting the energy into knowing who you are and understanding yourself and then making choices with what you found out, So yeah, I've experienced what you're saying. I am in it. But it's funny when you were saying like already you're more aware than you were just a few years ago. I feel the same way. But it's funny how we get to look back not even that far ago and feel like we've learned so much and that we've grown so much in our experiencing of ourselves and then the world. It's a funny experience with time because it's just a few years ago, but then how is it that, this kind of growth can be so, it can feel so accelerated?
Yeah, it can be so fast. You can feel so stagnant and then it can go so fast. And then you wonder, how did I not know that? How did I not know that about myself? Wow, this is so amazing. Or maybe you look back and you see all these opportunities to learn it, but you missed it. It was right there, but something distracted you and you kind of missed that aspect of yourself. But can you tell me, what do you feel has been one of the reasons you've become more self-aware? Like, is there an example of something that's happened or something you're going through right now?
I think there've been two big things. So I'm in my 40s, I'm 42, and when I look back, there were two big events in my life that really focused me. I made a choice to respond in this way. First, if we're going to go chronologically, is when I was 20, I started experiencing a lot of chronic pain in my body, and it was not something that was diagnosed for a really long time, and it was a daily frequent occurrence. And so it was very frustrating, and it was obviously very painful. And that led me to want to heal myself, to take it into my own hands, per se. So like I was already on that journey, was like, okay, so what does this mean? I decided to kind of approach it that way. And so that continued for, more than a decade. And of course, I took better care of myself. I started learning about myself and learning how that might be connected, to the things that I've experienced, and the way that I experienced my childhood, the way that I experienced everything afterwards. And so, that was already a choice when I was 20. And then when I met my stepdaughter, when she was very, very young, I also then again saw that it didn't matter if I intended or not to influence her, I was going to influence her.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't she wasn't going to wait for me. There was no waiting. There was not going to be a time where we could go back and do it better, and that all of the things that were really left to be unturned so that I could show up as the best, step parent, and then guide her from a better place. Like that really, like realizing that, and I realized that early on. I think she just repeated a word I said that only I had, that I use as an expression, and it really hit me. Like no one else used that around me, and she just repeated it. I was like, wow, she's absorbing who I am, and I can't prevent this, and I have to, go in there, and I really reconnected with that commitment to cleaning things up and really understand and healing, more healing, but so that I could show up as the kind of parent that I really wanted her to have and that I wanted to be.
Yeah,
So are
yeah.
the
Parenting is, no matter how you're chosen, like no matter what your path is for parenting, I also think we're all mothers to the next generation. I think we're all influencing those women and those kids who are coming after us. I'm actually leading a sharing circle for my daughter's friend who she died of suicide. And I'm leading a sharing circle for the girls in the trauma and the aftermath of that, and thinking what a gift it is that I've been able to run circles with the well for all these years. And then now I get to have this opportunity to impact these girls' lives in a way that I would have never had the training or experience for had I not, went through these, a lot of the hard lessons that I've learned through the well. And what a gift if this was the only reason that would be worth it for me. So I feel like that was, I wasn't expecting at talking, mentioning that, but I just think about what an impact, what an honor to have that impact, to be able to create space for these girls who are 12 to be able to share individually how they're feeling right now after the post, it'll be post funeral when we meet next week. So, but also through, so through parenting, the last 17 years for me of being a mom, I have had situations happen and I have went, I do not like myself. I don't like the way I reacted. I love myself, but I do not like how I reacted in that situation. I actually am not okay with doing that again. And you have to do such deep work. And it is healing work, but avoiding that work would just be so sad to not be able to have that opportunity to heal. So how do you, in the meantime, have compassion for yourself as a human being when you know you've made a mistake and you can't, you can communicate and you can try to repair it, but you really, you can't make it go away.
Exactly.
I've thrown a lot at
Yeah,
you there.
I mean, this is it, right? This is where things really matter,
Yeah.
in my opinion, in the way that I experience my life. This is where it all gets to matter, is that you do something new. But there are steps to that, and like self-compassion, which is what is required here. That's where it all starts. It's funny, like I created a show before COVID called Forgiveness is Freedom. It was a concert meditation experience where I led the audience through a forgiveness practice in 4 steps. It was based on Desmond Tutu's work around his work around truth and reconciliation. And upon my reflecting on this show, like during the time it was happening and especially afterwards, I realized how self-compassion and self-forgiveness is where everything really starts. There is kind of a bit of a beginning. It's funny, I would, ask people to think previous to the event, to choose something that they want to work with that felt like manageable. And a lot of the times, intuitively, people would switch very quickly upon the beginning of the experience to self-forgiveness. They just like left their intention, like, no, actually, I think I just have to focus on this. And that was so interesting to me. And I started, afterwards, in reflecting upon it, it's really when you enter into those spaces, into your past versions of yourself, And you start rekindling how it felt in that moment and remembering the context. And now you know more. You know what it's like to be much older. And so you get to go back and understand like what your actual capacity was for self-responsibility, what your actual capacity was for, agency, and what you knew, and what the level of your needs were, because you depended, like the younger you are, the more dependent you are. And you get to paint this very different picture of the same experience and really extend care for yourself and very deep understanding for what actually it was like. And then you still, it doesn't erase mistakes that you've made. It doesn't erase the pain you might have caused or things you might have said, or you can't undo actions, but you have that deep understanding of like where those things stemmed from. And so then from there, it can ripple out when you see someone do something. It's not the same experience. It doesn't make anything that's hurtful right, but it's a very different way to kind of meet life and meet what's happening around you. And it starts with self-compassion. And it's interesting because it's you cannot bypass that. You cannot bypass that process within yourself and just get to the same result of feeling for others. It has a different quality when you bypass it. You can still think that you've forgiven, but you can't do that without actually extending that to yourself. I think first, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's not that sequential, but that's what I've observed.
No, I think it is true. I think it's true. I think there's a level of learned empathy or learned compassion, maybe from witnessing. So we watch how, someone in our community extends grace to a child or someone does something wrong. We can witness it and we can choose that action and we can kind of, to a certain extent, mirror the language and the facial expressions. We can mirror empathy or compassion in a sense. And we can do that because maybe we have the gift of not having been in a situation ourselves where we've had to learn. So that's wonderful. We're all I don't try to protect my kids from things very much, but I think generally it is hard to watch people suffer. So we do try to protect people from pain. So, but you really can't have that authentic compassion until you've went through it. And I know that I noticed that a lot with if we talk about death or if we talk about loss, until you've actually experienced a loss, it's really hard to know the right words to say. It's really hard to know what that person's going through and be able to meet them where they're at. So I think sometimes it's like you just are aware that you can't meet them where they're at. And maybe that's the compassion that you're extending or the empathy in that moment. But yeah,
And
I
then
do.
what you're able to do, when you're holding a circle for 12-year-old girls in this case, and what you're able to do if you've been able to reconnect with your 12-year-old and really kind of recalibrate your understanding of the level of need, the degree that they're self-aware, that which they're not. Some of them are like for sure super amazing, right? They're amazing. And I can speak because I think, my stepdaughter is amazing in how she's like opening and growing and expressing herself and like really taking in and growing in the world. But in terms of self-awareness, like it's still she they're still so young. And then how you're able to hold a circle, being connected to knowing what that's actually like and not having just kind of it's still somewhere in your unconscious and unknown. So how
Yeah.
we're that's what I meant by how it ripples. Like
Yeah.
it's difficult to describe. But this work is so impactful. It really does ripple. It really does change what's happening around you from the smallest, tightest circle in your family to then in the community and then like in the wider community as well, and your work with the work that you do.
Yeah, it is really fulfilling, I suppose, is I said enjoyable at the beginning. I think it's fulfilling. I think that's more the correct word for me. Yeah. Yeah, and it's really what life's all about for me is that opportunity to be able to have a space where people can share where they're really at. I always try to show up that way as best I can. Not try to, energize my mood, or like I try to just show up in the most honest way. Because the well is a place where if I say you can do that, then I need to do that first. And I don't have an expectation that other people can do that, but I have to do that for them. But just coming back to the grade six girls for a minute, I had a really terrible thing happen in grade six. So terrible for me. And something that is a reason why so much of the work I simply had this experience that really created a lot of who I am, where I was friends with a group of girls and I came to school the one day and I came and I went to the circle because you're always standing in the schoolyard in a circle and they're all standing in a circle. And I've shared the story before, but I'll share it again. And I came into the circle where I normally would, and they just closed the circle. So I couldn't, and I was like, oh, okay, well maybe they don't see me, or so I just kind of walk around to another kind of opening and they close the circle and I was no longer welcome in the circle. But I didn't know previous to that, I had done something to upset them, but I didn't know what it was. I still don't know what it is, which is hilarious and odd, but they closed the circle on me, and I never had that group of friends again from that day on. So it was a one, it was morning, and it was never again was I friends with them. And I made new friends. I found new people and were friends with them. But I think about how that was such a defining moment in my life. And I still wonder why and what did I do? And I think that's still hard. There's a part of that that's still hard for me. And a part of that is I never want anyone to feel that way. So hence, if you see all the work I do, it all kind of makes sense from that one moment. I really want everyone to feel that they deserve to be heard and a part of it, and that we have grace for people's mistakes. And but I even think of like holding this circle for these girls now from having that really impactful situation at the similar age. Like I was grade six, they're in grade seven, but 12, and being able to make sure that that doesn't happen in that circle. Like every voice deserves to be heard and shared their own feelings, and their feelings aren't wrong, even if they sound weird. What they say sounds weird to the other girls, or sounds, even if someone giggles, we can work through that. Okay, so, if I notice an expression, or we can work through those things and setting these girls up for success in a different way. Like I think of what that would have meant for me to be able to have a space with these friends to talk about what happened, what went on, and because it really does make a difference for the rest of your life, some of these experiences. And I've used it, I feel like I've used it in a good way, but it's still definitely there for me.
Yeah, that's a powerful. Thanks for sharing that. I didn't know. And it's really amazing to hear that story, actually, seeing the work you did, you ha and you're doing. And it's funny, how do we it's like a paradox, Like there we really have to guide our children and not shield them from the things that are really part of their fullest, meaning, how they're going to really create and find meaning and fulfillment. And some of our hardest experience are really tightly woven with our greater sort of destiny or our greater dharma or path. And you don't get to pick and choose. Well, I get to pick the, you don't, you, it's like braided in. And it's funny how what it would have been like if the adults in your life were like trying to smooth things over for, take responsibility and just sort of like make it all okay. And but you had a very deep experience of that, and it's part of you, and it actually also is one of the ways in which you have this key to create something new. It strengthens your why. So it's really interesting because yeah, we do want these girls to have an opportunity to process the experience they've been through. And you can offer them that. But in general, like as a parent, it's really tricky to guide without like overcompensating for the events in our children's lives that are actually meant to be part of them. So I don't, there's no right way, wrong way. Like there's a better way for sure. It's a better and worse way, but I don't think there's like, I don't know that you succeed if you shielded your kid.
You don't. You
You
don't.
don't, right? You
You
just, yeah.
like with a, you know, my kids are all going to be teenagers by the end of the year. So I'll have three teens by the end of the year. And I think my husband is so helpful for me because I'll want to help. I'll want to step in before the pain happens. I want to like protect them from ever having the situation. And he is said, you know what? They're going to make mistakes. They're going to do stupid things. We are their soft place to land. They will always be safe at home. We will be their soft place. We cannot control them. We can influence them. So he is much more, I would say he is less fearful. And I, because of the way I feel when something bad happens, I'm trying to avoid my own feelings of pain, to be honest. That's something I became aware of as I had children and thought, oh no, I'm trying to protect them. Well, I am, and I'm actually trying to protect the way it makes me feel when they hurt. I'm trying to avoid that. So, yeah, it's really interesting. I love the self-awareness that comes from involving yourself in children's lives. Whether or not you have children, I think it's really important to know that there is a responsibility to the upcoming generations and finding a way to be a part of that. Kids are so amazing and they're so open and the things they think of and say. So I really think that's like an important part of community is also being involved with the community at large in terms of like the youth. In a small, it can be in a small way, but
Oh yeah. And then also just to add, like this approach that you would have, that I would have with myself, that you would have with yourself, that we choose, it ripples regardless. And if you have children in your life, or if you don't have children or nieces and nephews, or like you don't have that, it still ripples and it still influences the new generations. It's definitely, like, in my experience, was really magnified because of the kids in my life. But I think that this work can be just as potent in any configuration that you have in your life, for sure.
what do you feel like has been some of the greatest ways you've, like, I know you said you shared those two with that you've learned self-awareness, but what are some of the actual kind of tools? You mentioned the artist way. What are some other things? Because I think it helps people to know examples of ways you've discovered you've become more aware of yourself through specific tools.
So the artist way was a long time ago. There was always something. I practiced Ashtanga yoga for 7 years, almost on a daily basis. There was a lot of things I was involved in. I went to Vipassana meditation, silent meditation retreats. And I think all of it builds on the previous, like it just builds. It's like it's and it snowballs too, which is nice, because it does you catch on to things a little bit easier, I think, as you go. I think that the most impactful, I guess, method or like, yeah, method would be doing internal family systems as a therapeutic modality, and finding a therapist that practices that like I actually deeply trust. So I'm really, really saying it as it is. So first it was a level of trust with her, but this modality to really understand the parts of you and how you get to really encounter them and understand when you're acting from which part. You get to understand why, but you get to extend care to them and hold them tenderly. You get to hold the critic that hurts you constantly, the kind of judgment part, the blame part, the shame part, like all of these parts that are inside and also you, but not necessarily maybe integrated properly, haven't healed. And that has been probably the most powerful process, was to be, committed to this kind of therapeutic modality. It's also really influenced how I see people and how I can recognize where they're acting from. And it's really helpful also in going forward to make better decisions in how to establish boundaries. If a person isn't committed to growing their self-awareness and is acting from a part and is predictable in that way. It's easier to set a boundary and be compassionate. You know, it helps to navigate the relationships inside but also outside. So that's been the most, I think, the most powerful thing, and that's been what I was doing in the probably like COVID onwards.
Okay, yeah, so that is a more recent thing. That sounds really interesting.
You're going to notice a moment here where there's a knock on the door and my son needs to share something with me. And I love the moment, so we kept it in.
Just 1 second.
Are you going, honey? Yeah. Okay, bye. I love you. Bye. You're welcome, sweetie.
That's my oldest. I love when they say I love you. Maybe I'll leave that in because it was cute. But, you know, it's interesting. I know we're not talking about values, but values come into play. For me, my greatest values, like my relationships with people. So I'll kind of sacrifice anything in order to maintain that relationship. Not myself, not if it's unhealthy, but I'm talking about healthy relationships that matter to me. So my kids. Anything I've went through with my kids, any really difficult times, it always comes down to I want to be in good relationship with them. I want to be able to say, I love you. And I want to mean it. And I want them to be able to say it to me. And I want them to mean it. And I have these like criteria that if I feel like we're there, then we're good. And if we're not there, then I'll do anything I can to get there. And I think that really knowing your values is something that also propels you to become self-aware. Learning your values is, you do have to become self-aware to know your values. So it does automatically start to put you in that direction. But just thinking back to why do I care about being self-aware? Why do I care about having compassion to myself? Ultimately, it does come down to those things that I value the most, which is for me, relationships and freedom. And I see how that plays in as a driver, a driving force within me to grow. I think we do need to know our internal drive. Like, why are we doing this hard work? You know, why do it all?
It's like, I feel very similarly. And it's really, really wonderful to hear you say that. You know, I was reflecting on what I would share about what I'm going through that requires me to actually practice self-compassion, that it's not easy. And it relates to what you're saying, because I've really committed myself to doing this work, and I've committed my time and my attention, especially my attention and my resources, my financial resources, mm-hmm. to really growing in this area. And one of my, you know, biggest top values is growth. And it's important, and this is the same for my partner, which is, you know, you'll see it reflected in our decisions. I'm engaging as many of us are in social media. I'm engaged in my culture. I'm, you know, really in my culture. I'm in my environment. And I can feel, you know, these waves of comparing myself and sometimes doubting the choice I've made to, because if you're pouring this attention into this, you're not pouring it somewhere else. You don't get to pour, like really pour attention in 10 different like directions. You're not going to make any progress. And I've really, and it's a season of my life. Like my children were little, you know, first my eldest, you know, she's 12. My youngest is 3 and a half. So it's really stretched this like, you know, young childhood period for me. Because now I'm going through all of it again with the little one. But I poured my attention into growing in this way, not like for them in this sacrificial way. No, I've chosen it. I wanted this. And at the same time, you know, I've withdrawn from a career progressively as I healed that I realized wasn't healthy for me. I wasn't helping me feel like most like myself, most expressive. I really had to hold back in this kind of industry, music industry. And so I've withdrawn progressively from it. And also then when COVID happened, you know, my activities completely stopped, but then I had a second child. And so it was a choice, but I have to remind myself and be very compassionate that it had consequences, and it doesn't make the challenge of figuring out how I move ahead in my career go away. But it certainly, the compassion will help just put my energy into problem solving and figuring it out and the action steps without, on top of it, having to put up with the judgment coming from myself towards myself on top of it all. Because, yeah, I did put myself in a different position, and some would argue not necessarily in my best interest. But it was really a choice I made with my full heart, as the from the fullest, from the wholest version that I had at that point, you know, being, let's say, 4 years ago, or, you know, going back and back. I did make this choice over and over. And it's not worth it, like, on all levels, in the sense that, like, I really want to pay attention to like the kind of career I'm going to build now. And I can ease off on how much resources and attention I pour into growing and healing, especially now that, you know, I feel at home in myself and I feel safest within myself, that I can have this radical self-honesty inside, and it's saving me energy now. But, you know, I do fall into these patterns where I re-question, or I feel, you know, like when I compare myself to where I could have been had I made a different choice. I do have to practice reminding myself and just easing, like, integrating all of those narratives so I can find a little more peace there. So that's been challenging, I'd say. I didn't expect that to feel that way. And I was wondering if you had something to share about your present moment, you know, and how you get to practice this today. If there's something that's kind of, you feel yourself falling, and you have to choose to be compassionate with yourself.
I think it's constant. I don't know what it is about the well, but it is constant where I'm evolving and making decisions and coming back to myself and going, is this doesn't feel right. Something's not feeling right. Okay, we need to shift that. We need to shift that. And it's not like when I make a decision, so I have a photography company for 26 plus years. When I make a decision in that company, it only affects me. It affects my family in terms of household income, but it's pretty steady even when I make a different decision. I don't have to communicate it to a whole lot of people. It's just, I made a decision, I changed it, I decided to offer this, not offer this. It's no problem. With the well, we have almost 100 members who are involved in it. And then we have the Toronto chapter, and we've got Saskatoon, and they're different places, and people are different there. And I have a team, and my decisions impact a lot of people. But what I always remember is that I matter as much as any of those other people, that nobody matters more than me, and I don't matter more than anyone else. But when it comes to actually the well as a business, it is ultimately my decision, and it is just an offering. And I don't have to keep it around for anyone else. And I can keep it around if I want to. So I always try to just come back to truth. Really, what at the end of the day do you want to do? And I think this is actually the first time I'll have said it publicly, but the mission of the well, because I've really been working on this for 6 years and it's never felt right. And this is the one that puts the piss in vinegar, as my mom would say. I want equity of feminine leadership at every table. I want it at every room, and I want it at every table. And I mean education systems, I mean religious institutions, I mean corporate, I mean dinner tables. Like, I want feminine leadership equity. I don't need majority. Yes, I love feminine leadership, but there's masculine matters. And I have a lot of masculine in me. We've talked about this, Andre, you and I, and I'm very open about that, but I need feminine leadership equity. So this is something I'm really passionate about. It makes me really angry. And I understand that the whole world's problems would just be solved if we could just have equity of feminine leadership and masculine, both energies at every table. Feminine energy does tend to come from more of the woman, but it is any gender, any human is able to hold that in, has it in them, and is able to express and make decisions that way. So I do think that at the end of the day, when I'm making these decisions for the well, why am I doing this? Why am I keeping doing this? What do I need to let go of? What's no longer serving the community or myself or my team? If I let that go, can we still achieve the goal, the mission of equity, of feminine leadership? Yes. Hey, then it doesn't matter what the offerings are. When you're hearing this podcast in December, we will have let the community know that we will be dissolving membership. So we are no longer having membership. We're having a movement. And it's something you can join the movement of the well. You can join the movement of feminine leadership, wanting to expand that and extend that. And what happened was the membership has just been very limiting, both for growth. Andrea's like, growth is something really important to you. Freedom is something really important to me. And I feel like membership has actually hindered both of those things. So it is something that needs to go. I know that there's going to be people that are confused in the community because they felt a real sense of belonging through being a member. So by joining the movement, you become automatically a well woman. And all you have to do to join the movement is subscribe to the newsletter. So it's very simple now. And like they'll have access to this podcast. It won't just be members. It will be for anyone who is interested in being a part. I need this movement to happen. Our voices need to get louder, which is why it's so important for me to amplify all of the women that I think are so wise and amazing, which is to me, all women are wise. It's just about getting in touch with our true voice. And I feel like there's just going to be so much freedom and amplification because of this change. But every time I go, I had a team meeting and I'm telling you, I think that's why my mood, Andrea is asking me why I'm so tired. And I think it's like, there's a lot of fear that comes into play with making a decision that's going to impact a lot of people. And how do I care for myself through these changes? It's hard, but I have to do the right thing because I'm leading the community and I need to be the example. So there, what do you think about that?
It felt so good hearing it. And, you know, it's always a really powerful and beautiful thing to witness someone growing unapologetically. And, you know, it actually does strengthen everyone else. But I'm not saying that these decisions are easy. Like, that's just something that is a consequence of all the hard work you've done. And it's interesting when you're talking about, well, there's a few things here. It's just so incredible, like that, you know, the change that this growth is bringing and how that impacts everybody in the community. But also there's this notion, it's not even a balance of feminine and masculine. It's this mastery in knowing and using discernment of what kind of leadership are you going to act from? Like, and knowing what's what in your own system, and then using discernment in whatever situation will require. And so there's, you know, like, yes, we listen to our bodies, we listen to our intuition, but we also need to respect our minds and give them the role, that proper role that they should take in our lives as we're human beings. And, you know, like, it's important to deeply listen to these very core aspects of how we operate. And discipline is a really big, important aspect of how we can be free. Freedom is a really big value of yours. There's like no freedom without discipline, you know. And so it's interesting because there's feminine leadership and it needs to be given the voice that it deserves. So at this stage, we need to amplify it, but it's not that it should, you know, override all of the other ways that we need to lead. And so it's about this masterful way of being in touch with these kinds of forces within our own beings and then in how we organize as well. And that is something that we have yet to really discover and experience. And so I think the efforts that you're making are definitely like pouring into the evolution of that. I hope that wasn't too abstract. I think it was even too abstract for me.
Oh, I live in the abstract. But no, I set structure around me. So I know myself and I know how I live and I know my visionary. And I know that I need certain things in order to create the container where that can really thrive and do well and actually then create change. Because if it's just floating out there, it won't ever have any impact. So I fully recognize the need for structure and for systems and for a container. And I know how to make that. now through the help of other people and through the masculine and the feminine. So I think it's seeing the beauty in how they work together, how they're always meant to work together. And the feminine's just been kind of discredited and sort of silenced a bit, and that a lot, over the last years. So I'm always going to swing the pendulum to the feminine, but the well operates in a beautiful relationship of both, for sure. But I can have full compassion on myself when I'm like, this isn't working. I'm not going to keep driving ahead because I made a decision a year ago or 5 years ago. I'm not going to keep going for that goal. That's actually not the right thing anymore. And it's being in touch with myself enough and then being able to share that. And you know what I get from my team when I share that? The most loving, generous, grace-filled conversations. The no one is afraid. We're like, let's talk about it. How can that look? And that's the feminine. We really operate in our meetings out of that. Let's just have this time to talk about it. Let's just hear each other. And then we end it and we're like, okay, now how do we structure this? And it's so beautiful to be able to do that and to never feel shut down. Like our voices matter. And I think that's the thing is your voice and our Toronto voices, our Saskatoon team, and then all the greater community. The voices really matter to me and to one another. There's so much wisdom, and I'm so excited to watch it flourish.
Yeah, and it's really great to hear you say that because it really speaks to the kind of culture you've been able to create and cultivate over time that you can have that experience now. And then it takes capacity to invite all the voices to be heard and to really listen.
It does.
And that's something I'm really interested in, is that even to the degree that there's conflict, to really listen to what's actually there, and then to organize and structure after taking in, what you heard. It's really beautiful to see how you explain how these kind of masculine and feminine energies are playing out in the well. But it's a kind of mastery to know to you when to invite what.
Yeah,
And
it's learning. We're learning. Yeah, as a team and as a community, we're open to learning. And I think it's humility and just going, it's okay. We're gonna screw it up and then we're gonna get back on track. This energy is flowing. The feminine energy is flowing, and I was invited on the train. So I said yes. And if I hop off the train, it's gonna keep flowing and someone else is gonna get on. So it's gonna happen. We're all, that's a movement. Like we're all being moved and called towards something. And we're answering the call. And I think we just keep going and we don't have to worry about the mistakes because we the feminine movement, that energy and that spiritual part will keep us on track. We'll just keep the right people will get pulled in. We'll just keep moving forward. And I'm here to, speed it up a little if I can. I feel like that's kind of if I can have a role in fast forwarding a bit of that, then like I'll do that. And that's why I have amazing women like you. I got to meet you. What an honor to get to know you
Oh,
and have
thank you.
you.
Likewise, like it's think it's that's completely the way I feel, and it's what you're doing is you're placing your attention on it, and so it's definitely more present, and that's like it's amazing what you're growing. I feel there's a couple more conversation out of that's kind of coming out of this
Yeah.
conversation, but maybe for a different
To be
podcast.
continued. To be continued, Andrea. I think you should, we'll end here because we've had such a great conversation. It's been about an hour, which is like amazing and how long we usually talk for, but just make any notes you're thinking of so we can have our part two.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, and it's been great talking to you today.
I'm so excited. Oh, just adore you. Thank you so much.
You
Bye.
so much to you.
See you.